Hope everyone's enjoying the first day of the conference. I'm Mark Appelman, the Executive Director of SABR. Want to welcome everyone again. Now I'm going to be introducing Joe Poznanski, who's our next speaker. And Joe was recently named the national columnist at NBC Sports. Joe was formerly a senior writer for Sports on Earth and a senior writer at Sports Illustrated. From 1966 to 2009, Joe was a sports columnist for the Kansas City Star, where he was named best sports columnist in the country twice by the Associated Press sports editors. He's been nominated for 21 APSE awards and has written two books on baseball, The Machine, the story of the 1975 Cincinnati Reds, and The Soul of Baseball, a road trip through Buck O'Neill's America. The title of Joe's talk today is The Romance of War, and FIP and Dips, and Runs Saved. And now I'd like to introduce Joe Poznanski.
Thank you very much. I am Joe Poznanski of NBC Sports, and I'm not telling you that because that's if I want you to know. I'm telling you that to remind me where I happen to be working now. Moved around a little bit. But I started NBC Sports just about 3 weeks ago. Very exciting, and very excited to be here. This is this is just great. This conference is amazing, and I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. So my talk today is there's so little that I can actually offer analytically to this conference or anywhere else. I actually went to college to be an accountant, and I always tell kids when I speak at schools, I always tell them, I remember very specifically the day I realized I wasn't going to be an accountant. I was taking the city bus home from school, from college, and we passed this business park, and I was looking out the window at this business park, and they had all of these people with their, wearing their suits, and they all had their briefcases, and they were talking about whatever it is you talk about at business parks. And I just remember looking out that window, and I remember thinking, that's never going to be my life. That's just not for me. It really isn't for me. And coincidentally, that was the day I had failed out of accounting. So it worked out. It worked out so well. And so I through a long series of coincidences and luck and breaks, I started writing. And so I was drawn to this as a writer. I was drawn to this as someone who loves to tell stories. I was thinking about this, as I was watching, listening to Brian give his great talk and listening. And I was in there thinking, for whatever reason, he was telling these great stories, and I was trying to think of a favorite baseball story I could tell. And I don't really have one. Nothing came to mind. I mean, I have a lot of baseball stories I've seen, but the story that came to mind was, I remember one day I was in Kansas City, I was working for the Kansas City Star, which, by the way, I started in 1996, not 66. I'm sorry, I'd be really old. So, watching the game, and it was a Sunday game, and it was just an afternoon game, I wasn't working or anything, and I was sitting there, and the Royals, this was 2005, 2006, something like that, and I'm watching kind of half-heartedly, I'm looking at something else, and suddenly, whoever they were playing hits a long fly. I think they're playing the White Sox, and they hit a long fly ball to center field. And the center fielder starts going back on the ball. He's running and running and running, and he's like, you can see him measuring the wall, which is, to me, one of my favorite parts of baseball. It's like the guy, like, he knows where the wall is. He feels his foot on the track. He's going to climb the wall. He's going to put that big foot up on the wall. And he measured it perfectly. I mean, it was just beautiful. And he went to the wall, and he put the foot up on the wall, and he goes up. And, I mean, it was just beautiful. And the ball landed 10 feet in front of him on the track and bounced over the fence for a ground rule double. And the umpire called it a home run because he could not believe what he had just seen. And I was thinking about how much I love baseball. How much I love the game. I love that. I love the stories. I love the personalities. I'm driven by all of that. And so what I wanted to talk a little bit about today was, I'm also drawn to the numbers, and I'm drawn to the analytics, and I'm not smart enough to do so much of the work, but I'm hopefully smart enough to figure out what a lot of you and a lot of other people are coming up with and saying. And what I've sort of found, you know, as my goal as a writer is to marry those two things, you know, and I think Brian does that really well. I think that there's been, for whatever reason, and I mean, I think I know the reason. There's a relative antipathy on the mainstream side for some of the analytics, and I think, you know, we can talk about the reasons. I think people in general don't want to be proven wrong. They don't want to give up on their myths. They don't want to, you know, I mean, baseball is a nice simple game when you can just say, you know, the guy got a hit because he's got a bigger heart than everybody else. You know, I mean, that's a simple way to look at it, and you don't want to give up some of those things, and I understand that. But I don't understand why people have not, to me, taken so much of what's being done analytically and used it to tell stories. And, you know, everybody uses last year's MVP race as an example, and I will too. I mean, I think you look at Miguel Cabrera and you look at Mike Trout, and they both had amazing seasons. Amazing seasons. They're both great, great players. They're both MVP. You know, I mean, depending on what year it happens to be, both those guys had MVP years. I mean, it's not like one was a dreadful choice. You know, it wasn't like I'm not going to name Andre Dawson 87 or anything like that. I'm not naming anything specifically. But no, I mean, they were both had great years. However, if you looked at it in certain analytical ways, it was pretty clear Mike Trout was better. And when you said that to people, they would say, well, you know, you can't, you know, the numbers, I don't want to hear about it, you know, analytically, that doesn't matter, whatever. And what I wanted to say and what I did say, what I wrote over and over again, it's not the numbers. I mean, the numbers are just telling the story. When you look at Mike Trout, you see a guy, Miguel Cabrera was, by certain measures, a better hitter than Mike Trout last year. He didn't get on base as much, quite as much as Mike Trout. But he was a better hitter with more power and so on. Well, that's fine. And then you look at Mike Trout, and Mike Trout certainly contributed more in the field, contributed more as base runner, did a lot of things that Miguel Cabrera, you know, can't do. So how do you figure it out? How do you figure out which one had the better year? How do you look at those two guys and say, okay, well, who's my MVP? Well, you can say, as many people did, Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown, he's your MVP. Okay? That's looking at the numbers, same, you know, as everybody, just looking, I think, at the wrong numbers. And so you can, to me, that is a big part of what, you know, I try to do. I think it's a big part of what's going on at teams now. I think it's a big part of what's going on in all of our community. And that is trying to bring a narrative to what it is that we do, trying to bring a little bit of a story. Because it's like, you know, I was just in here for the depth of the strike zone thing, which was amazing. It was fascinating. And that, you know, that they were breaking down, I don't know, I guess about half of you were here, but breaking down where batters hit the ball in the strike zone. I mean, that's fascinating. I mean, it really is interesting, you know, and there's more power, it seems, when you hit the ball out in front of the strike zone, unless, you know, maybe more batting average because you're going the other way when you're hitting the back of the strike zone. And there's a, you know, very, very interesting different hitters. One of the interesting things in there was that Ishiro is last year, I believe, had the biggest differential. Basically, he was the guy who would sometimes hit in front, sometimes in back. He was like the one guy in all of baseball who moved around, or he moved around more where he hit the ball. That's fascinating stuff, but it has to be told as a story. It has to be built out that way in order, I think, to win over a lot of people. And, you know, WAR as a statistic, since WAR is in the title of this thing, is a great, fascinating statistic. It doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean that somebody who has a 4.4 WAR is better than somebody who has a 4.0 WAR. It doesn't mean that, but it's an effort to bring everything together into one sort of general number and basically try to translate that into how many wins that person contributes to the team. And it's an effort, and it's going to get better. And, you know, I think even here at the conference, they're working on some things to try to make it better. Defensive numbers are going to get better. Everything is going to get better. And the numbers are going to, you know, become more true to life, more accurate. You're going to be able to find all sorts of things. But it's still going to come down, I think, and I think you don't want to lose this. It's baseball is fun, and it's a great game, and it's a game of stories. And, you know, I think one of the things, you know, we were actually just talking a few minutes ago about, you know, Bill James, my friend Bill, you know, he changed the landscape for so much of this. And he did it by telling stories. He didn't do it by, I mean, he came up with some great concepts and some great numbers and so on, but he did it as a writer, and he did it as a storyteller, and he basically did it, you know, by pointing out this doesn't make any sense. I remember a real moment for me when I really started to think about things differently. It was something I read Bill wrote, and I can't remember when he wrote it. But it was just a simple point he was making, I think to make some other point. And he was just pointing out how silly it was that the Cubs used to bat Ryan Sandberg second and Mark Grace third. Okay, so Sandberg was, you know, this was when Sandberg was a huge power hitting second baseman and Grace was a very light hitting first baseman. And it was very clear if you know, batting average, batting orders, we could talk about how important they are anyway. But the general theme was your second hitter was, you know, guy didn't strike out a lot, move the ball around, can you know, move runners over, move runners first to third, you know, that kind of hitter. And your third hitter was generally your power hitter. Well, in that realm, Mark Grace is clearly a number two hitter because that's the kind of hitter he was. And Ryan Sandberg was clearly a number three hitter because that's the kind of hitter he was. But that wasn't how they hit. They hit Ryan Sandberg second and they hit Mark Grace third. And Bill's point was why? And the answer was, pretty simply, and I think this is true, Ryan Sandberg was the second baseman and Mark Grace was the first baseman. Second baseman are supposed to hit second. First baseman are supposed to hit third. It's just how the game is. And there's so many things in the game that are like that. So many things in the game that are sort of, I wouldn't say stuck in the past, but there's they still call them pitchers. Think about that for a minute. The reason they started calling them pitchers is because back when they started, they would actually pitch the ball, like horseshoes, underhand. They would pitch the ball, so they were pitchers. And it's 150 years later, we still call them, they don't pitch the ball. I mean, Brad Ziegler does, but the others don't pitch the ball. So, but we still call them that. And that's because that's baseball is driven by those kinds of narratives. They're driven by those kinds of stories. And that's, you know, in some ways for the better of the game and in some ways, you know, not for the better of the game. But I really, what I want to do, and I think what we should try to do is really try to bring out, you know, these new ideas and new thoughts in a way that is really interesting and provocative and thoughtful and not threatening. And I think this is where it gets really tough. You know, I was just at the Sloan Analytics Conference last week in Boston, and I was on a panel with Voros McCracken, who is the guy that devised the DIPS system. Basically, he had come to the conclusion, running pretty basic numbers, that generally speaking, starting pitchers had surprisingly little control over batting average once the ball was put in play. Essentially, they could control strikeouts largely. They could control walks to a degree. They could control the amount of times they hit, you know, home runs were hit. There were talents along those lines. But generally speaking, once a ball's hit in play, it's really out of the pitcher's hands, and it's much more in the defense's hands, or it's much more in the realm of luck, in the realm of, you know, where the ball exactly is hit, and so on and so forth. And it was an extremely provocative thought at the time. And he told me, and he said this on the panel as well, it took him 10 years to get anybody to believe him, which is pretty amazing, because when I read about it the first time, I thought, there's no way that's true. That is, there's literally no possibility that that's true. And I remember doing this, and I went to the computer and did my incredibly lame spreadsheet, you know, with the Word Excel thing with the blocks like this big, because I don't know how to shrink them. And I ran Nolan Ryan's numbers. Because to me, like, if Nolan Ryan couldn't control, you know, balls hit in play, then to me that was like, I'm going to prove this wrong, like, with one guy. I mean, it was just so obvious to me. And I ran the numbers, you know, in my own way, and it was clear it would go up and down every year. Some years it was really good. Some years it wasn't so good. Some years it was toward the bottom of the league. Some years it was toward the top of the league. You take strikeouts away and walks away, which, of course, in Nolan's case, you take those two away, it's pretty much everything. You know, I mean, that's what he did. But it was amazing. And so then I ran it for Greg Maddux, and then I ran it for Randy Johnson. I ran it for Pedro. And it was true. I mean, it was at least true enough that it was fascinating, you know? And I know that there's all sorts of, you know, adjustments, and does it affect relief pitchers the same way, and is this still as true as it used to be? And I mean, I there's all sorts of thoughts about it. But as a basic concept, it was so interesting. And so much could be, like, drawn from it. So much could be learned from it. And obviously, you know, like at FanGraphs, obviously they use it extensively when determining how to judge a pitcher. It's just so interesting, but it took so long because people didn't want to believe it. And honestly, I think because the story wasn't good enough. It wasn't interesting enough. And that's hard. It's very, very difficult, I think, to bring these incredibly that one is not as complex, but some of these other concepts that are so interesting about the game are very, very complicated, and they're very math heavy, and they're very difficult to sort of condense in a way that make them interesting for baseball fans. But I think that's sort of the job, you know, and I think more and more people should be doing that, because I think baseball fans, to me, want to enjoy the game more. That's all they want. It's you're a baseball fan, you love the game. Anything that makes the game more fun, more interesting, more you gets you a little closer to the game, I think people embrace. That's just a general, I mean, I've seen that across the board. And I think so much of what is being done, so many of the analytics that are, you know, being you know, figured and worked out and developed and perfected and so on, they make the game better. They make the game more fun to watch. I want to know more about where the ball is being hit in the zone. To me, that's absolutely fascinating. I was looking, they had a chart up here, and they had basically all the pitchers and where their balls were being hit in the zone. And I'm actually going to do this guy's presentation now. So, but all of the numbers were kind of bunched up except for three guys. And, you know, basically what he found, which was very, very interesting, is that depending on how fast you throw the ball, people are generally hitting the ball in a certain spot depending on the speed of the ball. Like faster balls tend to get a little more in on guys and slower tend to be hit a little bit more out in front of the plate and so on. But three guys were like separate from them. And you know, a couple of them were sidearm guys, Ziegler. But one was Mariano Rivera. Mariano Rivera was separate from other guys who throw the same speed as Mariano Rivera. All alone, by himself, ball getting in on people much more. Think about all of the great storytelling possibilities there. I mean, the guy breaks more bats than anybody else. The guy is pretty much unhittable no matter how slow his fastball and his cutter gets. You know, his cutter was dominant when it was 95, and now it's 91 or 89, and it's just as dominant. How is that possible? How, you know, what is that? I want to know more. And that's how we can really, you know, come to answers on those things. And come to, not even answers so much, just come to storytelling on those things. And I think that's what I really focus a lot on as a writer and try to really bring some of that home and bring some of that to various people. You know, one of the things that was talked about earlier that Brian brought up was he was talking about using pitchers in a different way, starting pitchers, for instance, in a different way. And he was talking about how difficult in some ways it would be to teach guys or to get guys, say, okay, look, you're going to throw it three innings, but you're going to throw every 3 days or every 2 days or whatever the number is, every 3 days maybe. And you throw three innings, you're a starter, but you throw three innings. And he was saying, yeah, but guys are going to be upset because you can't get the win if you throw three innings. And he's absolutely right. And I think that is probably, to me, the most underrated aspect of the numbers. It's not just the numbers. When you look at the numbers and the way that you analyze them, they can teach you about the game. But a number gets powerful enough, it actually affects the game. It changes the game. And I talked about this a little bit at Sloan. The save has absolutely changed baseball. The save, think about how closers are used now. They're used at the start of the ninth inning, one inning, three outs. if the team is down three runs, up three runs or more, or three runs or less, excuse me. That's it. That's how they are always used. That is the save. That's literally the save. That's the rule. It's like the rule is managing baseball. And that's across the board. The rule has created huge millions for pitchers who, for the most part, are not good enough to start in the big leagues. It's created a huge market for those people. It's given those players great opportunities. It's changed the way we watch baseball. It's changed the way the game is managed. And it's a number. It's a statistic. And the win is the same way. The reason I truly believe one reason that there have been so few efforts to completely revamp the way that starting pitching is done is because you need to go five innings to get a win. That's just it's really the most simple you know thing. But yet those kinds of things really have a huge impact on the game. So I really want to answer questions and talk about whatever it is that you guys want to talk about. But I will tell you one other sort of thought that I have along these lines. You know, when you're in the media and you're a writer, there are a lot of people in the media. I know that a lot of people in the media sort of get a reputation for being sticks in the mud. I'm thinking of a lot of words that I can't use. But there's a sense that people in the media are not open to new ideas, they're not open to new thoughts, they want to focus on a certain thing. I don't know that that's true. You know, I mean, certainly there are some, but I don't think that's generally true. I think what's happening is there are a lot of, especially now, there are a lot of young people coming in, a lot of people with a lot of different ideas, and what you find is it's actually very, very difficult to tell the story through the numbers, through the various things. And I'll give you just one example. A couple of years ago, Justin Verlander had that incredible year, just absolutely amazing season. And he wins the Cy Young, wins the MVP. He goes into the postseason, and he's pitching, and he's not really pitching very well as far as giving up runs or pitching late into games or anything that you would generally, you know, use as pitching well. But the narrative about Justin Verlander had become so strong that people were writing all sorts of amazing things about Justin Verlander, superhuman effort as he gives up four runs in six innings. Incredible, incredible performance. The guy is he's amazing. And this went on for a while. And I started writing, I don't get this, because he's a great pitcher. I'm not downplaying how great Justin Verlander is. But he's not pitching that well in the postseason. I'm not saying that changes anything, but the words just were in heroic Justin Verlander, ungodly Justin Verlander, it was really over the top. And I just thought, man, this is such a powerful narrative. And I would write, and people would just really be angry that I was just basically pointing out that Justin Verlander is not pitching that great. I mean, it was I was getting all sorts of, very, very pointed emails and thoughts and so on. Last year, Justin Verlander had a great year, but he didn't win as many games as he won the year before, and a lot of people seemed to miss out that Justin Verlander was really a great pitcher last year. About as good, pretty close to as good as he was his Cy Young year. Maybe not quite as good, but pretty close. He didn't win the Cy Young last year. And I voted for him. I voted for Verlander. And I wrote a column basically saying how great Justin Verlander was, and nobody's seeing this. I wouldn't say nobody. He finished second. It wasn't like people thought he stunk or anything. But people weren't realizing, because of really the simple win number, I think, and his ERA was a little higher, that basically people were saying he wasn't as good. It was an okay year, but it wasn't this otherworldly year like he had the year before. And I wrote this column basically saying, hey, I think Justin Verlander is very underrated this year. He's having a great year. And I got a lot of angry email about how I was totally wrong, and they could not believe it. Justin Verlander was not as good as he was last year, not even close, and that, I don't remember who it was. I guess probably David Price fans or whoever it is. And I was kept looking. I kept waiting for one email. And I finally got it. It was, you know, a few days after I wrote it. And it was a guy from Detroit. And he wrote, it was a very long email. But the essential point of the email was, I'm glad you finally got around on Justin Verlander. I'm glad you like him now. And I thought, that's how powerful this stuff is, you know? And that's how powerful the narrative is. And that's how so much of what, you know, we want to read, what we want to do, breaks those narrative, you know, chains. And that's hard. It's hard to do. But I think it's really well worth doing, and I think it makes the game better. It makes the game more interesting. I think as I look at baseball, why I love it and why I love, you know, writing about it so much is I think it's – you don't get one – like, you know, I love – I'm a big sport fan in general, and I write a lot about sports. But in general, I think in baseball, there's so many different ways you can look at something. And in other sports, sometimes one storyline just kind of just keeps coming over and over and over again. And it's just kind of a, I like LeBron James, I don't like LeBron James. I think LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan, I don't think LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan. And it's very two-way. And I think, you know, some of that's changing. I mean, some of these, you know, analytical thoughts and some of these studies and some of these new things are definitely getting into the NBA and into the NFL. I mean, the Sloan Conference was fascinating. But I think baseball is still ahead, and I think that that's really what separates baseball is that there's just so many different ways to look at something and so many different storylines and opportunities to write. And so that's – it's a great game. It's a great game. So with that, I would love to answer any questions that you might have. I think we got a microphone going, so we'll do there.
So you're talking about sort of the perception of sabermetrics or analytics and how people can react negatively to that. And I think I saw the movie recently, Trouble with the Curve, where I think they demonized statisticians in favor of, well, I listened to the sound off the bat. And and so I'm, and it, not that it wasn't a wonderful movie, and not that
it wasn't ever, a wonderful movie. It was not.
But it was. But not that we should. What I'm trying to say is not that we should undervalue watching a person play. But I thought it was really interesting when I saw that movie that they are demonizing statisticians.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question. You know, and they would argue. You know, I mean, people on I don't know how many people are on the side of Trouble with the Curve, but people in that general world would say that Moneyball demonized the scouts and demonize people that look at the game. I don't like that divide at all. I don't think it exists to the level that people think it does. And I don't think it should exist at all. I mean, you want everything. If you're running a baseball team, certainly you want somebody there at the game, watching them, looking at them. There's so many things scouts can see and use, and that should absolutely be a part of it. And then the analytical stuff absolutely should be a part of it. It should be a full picture. I mean, Trouble with the Curve, I wrote a 5,000-word thing on Trouble with the Curve because it's what I do. And I broke down Trouble with the Curve, the baseball stuff with Trouble with the Curve. And I really, you know, they lost me when the superstar pitcher showed up outside the daughter's hotel room. Just happened to be throwing out there. He just, you know, there was a nice little field. And I thought how lazy that was. You know, that could have been a great movie. I mean, I don't know if it could have been a great movie, but it could have been a great baseball movie. It could have been, because there's so much about scouting that has not been talked about, written about. Those scouts they're amazing. I mean, some scouts are extraordinary. They do things, they have to look into the future. I was talking to a scout a couple days ago, and he was talking about Mike Trout, when he saw Mike Trout in high school. And he was saying how, you know, Mike Trout was a really, really good player. You could tell, but you couldn't see this. You couldn't see what a great player he became. And it's not that much later. I mean, it's only a few years later. But you could see, you know, enough, but you couldn't go all the way. Because otherwise Mike Trout would have been obviously the first pick in the draft. I mean, if you could take it to its logical conclusion, if you could take who was definitely going to be the best player, you would take Mike Trout. So that's the thing that they're going against all the time as scouts. I mean, there's no certainty in scouting. You're going in there with trying to figure out so many different things, so many different elements, and it's not just physical stuff. And that's another thing I thought they got totally wrong in the movie. In the movie, he never even talked to the prospect. And that's what scouts do. They talk to the prospect. They talk to the friends of the prospect, the coach of the prospect. What is this guy like? What is he like when he strikes out? What is he like when he – does he run the ball out? When he hits the ball back to the pitcher? Does he get down on himself? I mean, so many things that are very, very interesting and very important. And I don't like it when I see anybody on the analytical side mocking scouts, because I don't think that's right. And I don't like it when I see anybody on the scouting side mocking analytics. I think if you're going to be a good – if you're going to be a good organization – You're gonna embrace all of it, and you're gonna put it all together. And as a writer, I think if you're gonna be a good writer in today's world, if you're gonna be a good baseball writer, you got to marry it all the same way. It's exactly the same. Yeah, over here.
You spoke to how we need to tell more of a narrative with the statistics, and by definition, a story is an anecdote almost. And you know, obviously, we're here about sample size and things like that.
Sure.
Can you speak to the difficulty of translating the statistics into a narrative? I mean, I think Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs do a great job of it.
They do. They do a great job.
But, I mean, can you speak to the difficulty of doing that?
I don't think it's that difficult. I think it's difficult if you – look, I think certainty in all realms is bad. I just don't – I don't think you should ever be that certain of anything. I'm not – you know, I was talking to Farhan of the Oakland A's, and we were talking about the MVP race last year. And I was saying to him, I was talking about, you know, the great stat debate or whatever. And he told me that the Oakland A's, in their statistical measurement, they had Cabrera ahead of Trout. That statistically, objectively, their measure had Cabrera ahead of Trout. I'm not sure that Trout was a better player than Cabrera. I think he was, based on the numbers that I've seen. But it depends on how you look at it. I think certainty is bad. So to me, it's embracing some of that uncertainty, embracing that you're not necessarily writing truth. You're not writing like this is the only way the game can be played. This is the only way that you know, you can win at baseball many, 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 many different ways. And you can win in any sport many, many different ways. You know, there's so many elements that come together. So I think it's about embracing that. I think it's about using the numbers to tell a story. Again, if I'm writing a story about the hitting the depth of the batting of the box, if I'm writing about Ichiro. I think that's fascinating. Ichiro hits the ball sometimes back here. He hits it up here. That's the guy we know. That matches what we're talking about, you know. And if there's somebody who's ever numbered, I don't remember who number two was, but if number two, like, is not somebody we'd expect, that's great too. You know, I mean, that's just a great way to look at it. I, you know, don't want to quote Bill again, but Bill always said a great analytical tool will meet your expectations 80% of the time and surprise you 20% of the time. I think that's right. I think if those numbers shift too much, if it's too surprising, the tool is probably not very good. And if it's not surprising at all and tells you exactly what you already knew, it's probably not any good either. And I think as a writer, that's what you have to kind of strive for, is trying to find the surprises, tell those stories, you know, and really, like I said, bring people closer to the game. And I think numbers can do that. And I think some of those anecdotal things, the, you know, guy climbing the wall for a ground rule double, that's a part of it too. Let's see, where's our microphone? Right here.
Joe, since you've been a longtime sports writer and covered a lot of sports, how would you, I'd ask you to comment on taking examples from other sports to baseball. And I've been thinking about this week, knowing my son and I would attend this conference, is I don't think other sports wrestle with, you know, the battle of sabermetrics versus tradition and all that as much as baseball. I was reading a book, it was on Oscar Robertson, and the interesting thing he noted was when Magic Johnson started getting triple doubles, that moniker didn't exist.
Right.
And somehow someone came upon, gee, I want to check the books. Of course, we all know what Big O did. He averaged triple double. But I look at basketball and I look at changes, you know, doesn't create a lot of controversy. When I started playing basketball, they told you to stay between the man and the basket, then it was between the man and the ball,
sure.
Zone principles, different changes that don't, And I don't know whether it's because it doesn't drive individual analysis or finality of a player's good or bad or worth. I don't know what it is, but what is your view as to, do you think we struggle more on the baseball side of that versus other sports, or any analogy you can draw?
Well, no question. I mean, well, look, the baseball statistics have been a much bigger part of the game than it is anything else. I mean, in basketball, there are a lot of basketball statistics that are very commonplace now that don't go back very far. Block shots, you know, steals, things like that that don't go back very far at all. The numbers of baseball, as far as being a part of the game, a real part of the game, go back more than 100 years, well more than 100 years, to when batting average mattered, you know? I mean, there's the great stories about, you know, the Ty Cobb batting champ race, you know, of 1910 or whatever. And so, you know, it's a much bigger part of the game. And so it's much more, when you start bringing new analytics into a game that people kind of figured they already had figured out, that think that's, you know, I think that basketball and football in general, I think there is just this, there's a gap. I don't think people feel like people have figured out the basketball stats thing. But I think in baseball, people kind of like batting average, home runs, RBIs, got what I need. You know, I'm all set here. And so I think that's part of it. I also think baseball is just much more measurable. It's just a much more, you know, it's a bit of action, and then it's a stop, and it's another bit of action, and it's a stop, and it's just, there's, you know, I've said this, I love writing about football, but I literally don't know what I'm talking about. I literally do not know what I'm talking about. A guy scores a touchdown, I don't know how he did it. I mean, I saw him run, and I'll talk to him afterward. He'll say, "Yeah, thank God for my abilities," and and it's great. But it might have nothing to do with him. It might be that the left tackle man got a great block, or it might be that the middle linebacker was out of place, or it might be that the quarterback, you know, went on a quick count. And they won't tell me. They won't tell us, you know. And the coach doesn't know. I mean, the coach always says, "I got to wait to see the film. I don't have any idea." So it's a different thing. Yeah, sure, and that'll happen, and they'll keep analytically changing what they look at for other sports and all of that. Baseball is way ahead, you know, in general. I mean, baseball in America is way ahead. I mean, it's just been a popular sport for much, much longer, going back to before there was basketball, and going back certainly to years, you know, decades and decades before pro football was anything in this country. So, you know, some of those things are going to change a little bit. I also think that in baseball, you know, people have that there's a lot invested. You know, it's like there's so much already set. You know, I mean, everybody kind of knows their role, and you know, I'm the scout, I'm the cross checker, I'm the national cross checker, I'm the player development director, I'm this, and everybody's kind of got their role in baseball. And the same thing, I'm a sports writer, I'm a beat writer, I'm a columnist. It's all very, it's set, you know. And so when something is set like that, and something comes along and goes, "Well, actually, that's wrong," that's going to shake it up a lot more. And I think what they're doing at the NBA with statistics, I mean, like I said, when I was at Sloan, that was a big, big thing. What they're doing with the NBA statistically and watching, you know, with big data and watching what every player is doing every second on the court and screen percentages, and it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And they're starting from scratch. That's another thing about baseball. You know, I asked Bill a while ago, if you could, would you get rid of the concept of the error in baseball? Because the error is, you know, it's as Bill's written, it's a judgment call. It's the only judgment call stat I think we have in sports, where essentially all you're saying is, "Hey, he should have made that play." That's it. That's what the error is. And no other sport's like that. It's not like we say, "Should have made that shot." You know, I mean, that's not, you don't have worse, like if you miss a screen pass, it doesn't count any differently than if you miss a bomb in football. But we have the error in baseball. And I asked Bill, "Would you get rid of the error?" And Bill said, "No, because it's part of history. It's part of the game. It's part of the tradition of the game, the fabric of the game." I wouldn't look at them, but it should be a part of the game. We should keep counting them. And I think that's right. Baseball has a lot of things that we have to account for because they're a part of the history of the game. I think we have a question here. In the middle here? Yep.
This is actually, it feels like this subject keeps getting hit obliquely by you, and then I know Brian Kenny brought it up earlier, specifically related to fielding. There's a lot of, you know, we have stats going back forever. They're all pitching and hitting, and as you just pointed out, errors are subjective. There are other parts, you could argue, with fielding, you know, the ball bouncing off the pitcher's glove that then gets fielded by the second baseman. You get a 1-4-3 out.
Right.
Things like that, which even, or even if they're not subjective, they're at least flukes. You know, the ball that lands between three guys and is a hit, and so therefore not representative. As you're talking about narrative and understanding the game, I'd like to hear you address the idea of the fact that we have numbers for basically two-thirds of the game, if you think of like pitching, hitting, and fielding as like a three-legged stool. And for fielding, the numbers that we have are not necessarily representative, even if they're used.
Sure.
And in fact, for things like WAR, UZR, whatever, tend to be almost reverse engineered. You know, run save based on this indirect kind of measure.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the question is about for those of you who couldn't hear, the question is about baseball defense and the numbers and trying to, you know, trying to find new ways of and better ways of defining the numbers. And, you know, one thing that is true is defense in every sport is much harder to measure than offense in every sport. There really aren't good football defensive numbers. I mean, you have sacks. You have tackles, sort of. Nobody really keeps track of them. They give you, like, a number after looking at film or whatever. You have interceptions. But it's not – you don't really have a great way of defining, you know. Basketball, same thing. You got blocked shots. You got steals. But you don't really have a great sense of how you to define great defensive performance in basketball. And they're working on it. It's harder. It's harder because you're trying to prevent something rather than trying to actually do something. It's just a more difficult measurement to do. There are some amazing and fascinating break, you know, things that people are doing now. I actually just got a book about that I guess I'm going to read about defensive numbers. I think stuff that John Dewan is doing where they're studying video of every play and really trying to break it down against the average player. And I know that there's a lot of work being done with the speed of the batted ball and trying to do all sorts of things. We're going to get closer. I think we're closer now. I mean, I think defensive numbers, they're not in agreement in many cases, and you know, there's a lot of controversy. A guy that looks like a great defender might not show up that way in the numbers. Obviously, Derek Jeter has been brought up many times, but I think of Torrey Hunter. Torrey Hunter's numbers in general have been up and down. Some years are, especially in his early career, very good. Some years later career, not so good. But you can't convince somebody. I remember talking to a guy. He said, I watch Torrey Hunter play every day. He's a great player, great defender. He's an incredible defender. I don't care what the numbers say. Okay. I mean, well, you can't argue with that. You know, I mean, you can argue with it by saying you don't know what you're talking about, but you can't argue with it in a larger way. They're going to watch the game the way they watch the game. So I think the numbers are going to get better. Again, it's going to come down to, are you going to give people a reason to believe the numbers? And are the numbers going to be good enough that they're going to create a reason to believe the numbers? I think right now I really like a lot of the defensive numbers that are out there. But if my, you know, if one says this thing and one says another thing and my eyes say another thing, and all, you know, there's going to be some you know, some doubt and all that sort of thing. But I think they're getting better all the time. And I do think they're going to keep getting better. But I think all of them are. I think the pitching numbers are going to keep getting better. I think right now that is, you know, everybody talks about defense and there's a long way to go with defense. But I think with pitching and dividing, finding that separation between what is great pitching and what is great defense and what is bad pitching and what is bad defense and really splitting those two up, to me is a fascinating frontier and one I think that's going to be, you know, people are going to keep working on. What's the name, sir?
George. unless you deny it, I'm going to tell everybody that the outfielder who measured the wall so perfectly and then misjudged the ball by 20 feet was Kerry Robinson.
Kerry Robinson, right?
I bet it was. And that brings me to my real point, which is I hope someday, speaking of telling stories, now that you don't live in Kansas City anymore, and the Royals are actually going to win a game once in a while, that you'll write a book about those years covering the Royals, because people won't really believe all of the stuff that happened. I mean, I remember you and I were talking one day about the incredible different ways that the Royals had found to lose ball games. And the very next day after that, they lost a game when, you know, in Cleveland, how the seagulls settle on the park at the end of the game, and how they know when the game is going to end, nobody knows, but they do. Coco Crisp was playing center for the Royals at that time, and this is one day after we talked about the amazing variety of ways that the Royals could lose a game. The winning run is coming home from second base on a single to center. Coco picks up the ball and fires it home and hits a seagull.
It's a seagull.
I hope you write a book about those days.
Well, I did have one Royal story that I didn't want to tell. I was going to tell at the beginning. Can we talk about, you know, innovation, such a big part of the game, and it's a huge part. The Royals of the 90s, especially when they didn't have an owner, were extremely innovative, if you want to use, like, different as innovative, if that's what you mean. And they were trying everything. They were buying houses for players, hoping that might keep them in town, you know, stuff like that. But I remember this very clearly. I've written about half of this. I've never written the other half. The Royals were looking at a professional softball pitcher. They brought one in from Canada. It was apparently a legendary professional softball pitcher. And he went out to the mound, and they had a whole group of scouts out there. And Albert Baird, who works for the Red Sox now, he was an assistant general manager at the time. And they said, Albert, you need to come out. He's like, I'm not going out. I'm not going out to look at the softball player. And he's like, no, you have to come out and look at this professional softball pitcher. And so they're watching him, and he's, you know, he's making the ball move. I mean, I don't think it's going. He's probably going 80 or whatever. But, I mean, it's ducking and rising and doing whatever it is softball pitchers can do. And Allard walks out there, literally walks out. It's a balk. And he walks off. That's all he did. It's a balk. Every time he pitches, he doesn't even start on the rubber. He starts behind the rubber and comes on the rubber. And it's a balk. You can't do that. And he walks off. And so they come to him later, and they're like, what do you think, we should sign him? And he was like, it's a balk. I don't understand what you're saying. And they said, all right, well, you know, we'll talk about that. But there is something else I want to talk to you about. This is the same day. And he's like, okay. He goes, I'm thinking very seriously. I have a friend of mine. This is the general manager of the team. I have a friend of mine. He's an artist. And I'm very seriously thinking of bringing him in. And Allard's like, for what? And he's like, I want him to paint pictures of our players in mid-form, like while they're swinging or while they're pitching. I want him to paint a picture of them, and we can use this picture to, like, see if their form is right, or we can work on, you know, various things. And Allard's just sitting there looking at him. He's just like, because he's thinking that, you know, the woman with the cake is coming out, the joke is going to be... And he goes, why don't we get a camera? And the general manager says, because I want to see it through the eyes of an artist. So they were innovative. I mean, they were very... Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to the rest of the thing. Thank you so much.